Hey, this episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by one of our favorite sponsors, SunsetLakeCBD.com. That's right, SunsetLakeCBD.com. They are a movement partner. A couple of our sponsors that we have are just are folks that we deal with directly, and they support the causes that we support. They've been out there helping the nurses in Worcester. They've been helping with our raising money for Afghan refugees, and they care about the planet. They care about their product. They practice regenerative farming practices. Their CBD is completely pesticide free. They use integrated pest management, so they plant stuff around it that confuses the pests. They also organic fertilizer, and you can go to their website, and a third party breaks down all of the contents of their product. That's what makes their CBD that much better, just because you know what's in there, and it is super effective. I use the tinctures for sleeping, sometimes with the melatonin, sometimes just straight. But you can also, they have smokables. Matt uses the keef and mixes it in with other things that he smokes.
Indeed.
Fully legal in New York now, right?
Yep, and I just got a brand new,
I don't know why I keep like dancing around it. They also have fudge with CBD. They have great coffee with CBD, which is my weekend brew when I want sort of a calm, but also the caffeine jolt. Mm-hmm. They have the gummies. Just great products. Hand lotion. They have Solve with Arnica. Folks, check it out. You will not be disappointed. And the stuff, the biggest tell for me is that we get emails from folks who love their product, and they do a lot of repeat customers. So check it out, SunsetLakeCBD.com. And if you use the coupon code LEFTISBEST, one word, you get 20% off all your products. They also have that subscription service, which saves you 25%. But check it out today, SunsetLakeCBD.com. Now for this show.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, October 27th, 2021. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Democrats on the verge of coalescing around a tax plan. Oh, wait! Oops. President Manchin stubbed his toe and now has a problem with the proposal. Meanwhile, Virginia, whose election is less than 7 days away now, continues to scare Democrats as Obama and Biden both visit the state. That Obama speech. Woof. We should play that thing.
Very sanctimonious.
Oh, my God. I couldn't even get through this thing without thinking about that.
Wake up, folks.
It's all your fault.
January 6th. Investigators hit the pause on a demand for Trump docs from that day. And we are closer to seeing what's in and out of the reconciliation bill, and it's not good. Meanwhile, Bernie Sanders holding firm on a Medicare expansion. We'll talk more about that. An FDA panel recommends the Pfizer vax for 5 to 11-year-olds. Final approval seems imminent.
In the minute.
Meanwhile, Moderna agrees to sell up to 110 million doses to Africa. How nice of them. Former presidential advisor Deborah Birx says that the Trump team could have prevented 130,000 deaths in the U.S. And Texas Governor Abbott signs a bill banning transgender girls from playing sports in Texas. All this and more on today's program. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It is,
it's hump day.
That's the most animated.
Sometimes I like trying to, it's like a strategic thing I do. I'll like be low key before the show and then to take
I'm not just talking
surprise.
About like, I don't know if I could, I remember a single day, like a single moment where you've been more animated. I mean, I've seen you like angry, but like that level of excitement that doesn't have to do with, like, I would imagine you get that way, like, when you're watching, like, the Giants score a touchdown or you're happy about the Knicks today. That's what it is. But you got really excited about
how can you not be happy about the Knicks? But
go Knicks.
Go Knicks.
I don't care about the Knicks.
But I think you mix up what happens with me when I watch a Giants game. When they score, I just get more anxious that now my hopes are up and they're going to eventually lose. So it's more like a really abusive relationship other than that, because I'm just like...
I wasn't going to say anything.
The other shoe's going to drop. Oh, no. You know, he's being nice to me. When's it going to turn?
All right. Didn't go in the direction that I thought it did.
I just thought it was
about hump day. Emma Vaglin here, ladies and gentlemen, as you can see.
I haven't personally experienced that.
Going
just
through,
read about
apparently,
it.
some challenges that
no,
maybe
no.
we should be talking about afterwards.
No.
Speaking of challenges, you know, and we're going to get it. We're going to dig deeply into this today. The tax proposal that Ron Wyden apparently has been working on for years and has now been unveiled. And we don't know if it's actually going to be implemented. But if it is, there's a lot of people whom I trust who are saying that this tax scheme in and of itself, if it had just been its own bill, would have been really, really impressive. And it's unclear how much money it's going to raise, et cetera, and what that's going to allow for. And that's probably why Joe Manchin all of a sudden had a problem. I mean,
it's a lot more comprehensive than initially reported, because the Wyden bill is that too.
Yes. It is because we were talking about it. We thought it was one thing and it ends up being two things.
Yes.
But we will talk about that in a sec. But first, speaking of Joe Manchin, you know, I wish there was a follow up on this, but look at this. There have been climate activists who are on a hunger strike. And they're in Capitol Hill, or I should say just on Capitol Hill. One of these hunger strikers, a woman named Abby, approached Joe Manchin yesterday to urge him to stop blocking the provisions in the reconciliation bill to deal with climate change. And here's how that went. Joe Manchin seemed a little bit uncomfortable. Sound.
Your
office. We have been trying to reach you for months and months because you are standing against everything I need to have a livable future. I have dreams. Young people here have dreams.
You come and see me. You're more than welcome.
The United States does not pass massive climate action this fall. It is too late. This is one of our last chances.
Please come to my office.
Joe Manchin, I'm talking to you right now.
We can't get in on meeting. We've been calling. We're trying to get a meeting.
I'm not calling my office for a meeting. You're more than welcome to, and we're happy to have a meeting.
Okay, thanks a lot.
I want to live. I want to live. Young people want to live.
I mean, to be faced with that, and the first response is like, well, Asia's really not doing their share. This idea that the United States doing better than Asia is pretty twisted. And then, of course, the call my office is sort of like the last refuge of a scoundrel, isn't it? Because
call my office so I don't have to look at you in the face as I tell you I'm not going to do anything for you.
Exactly. And of course, the idea like these people, oh, call your office.
I didn't think of that.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course, call your office. And we hadn't thought about that. And of course, they've called their office. And of course, if they called their office 15 minutes after that exchange, there's no way they're going to be invited into that office.
Oh, yeah. There would be a buffer of a few staffers or interns that would say, oh, we'll take down this call for the records. And Manchin, our senator, takes your concerns very seriously. I mean, he just wanted to filter that entire situation out of his brain. Because, like, the only thing Manchin really cares about right now is, one, protecting his own finances, which is inextricably linked to his hesitancy on climate, and also is just being the kingpin and deal maker. And the people whose lives are affected by that deal making are a bit ancillary.
Now, one of the people who's not getting along with Joe Manchin these days is Bernie Sanders.
I thought they had that photo op, though.
They did have that nice photo where they took a picture with each other. And there, I mean, at one point, right, does this reconciliation bill become worth it to pass at all for progressives? I mean, there is... And I don't know that we know enough about what's in it. We'll go through, you know, sort of like what we know is definitely not in it and where we think it might land. And we're going to talk about the taxes. But at one point, the question may come down to, is it worth passing any of this? Is it worth passing any of it? Is the policy value just not significant enough, and the political costs associated with the way that these policies are being now sort of twisted and developed simply too great? And do progressives have more leverage if they wait a couple years? I mean, honestly, I mean, this is what it comes down to. It's a very hard decision to make for a lot of people. I mean, if you're going to have a child tax credit, a tax credit that's going to sunset in a year, and it may not get picked up again, and may end up, because it sunsets, may end up costing Democrats because the Republicans will run on it, and it's just going to be a diminishment of benefits for people.
Where'd that tax credit go? Blame the people in power. It's like the easiest thing ever, but of course they're going to try to make it expire right before the election so they get to pay the political costs.
I mean,
Idiots.
And I'm just using that as an example. Yeah. That may or may not be, but
I guess that's
like, at one point, do you say, like, this doesn't make any sense to continue to pursue? And look, Manchin wants some things in the bipartisan bill. Certainly Sinema wants things in the bipartisan bill. That stuff could just end up getting passed anyways, because there's stuff in there that Republicans want. And at one point, maybe you just say, we're going to walk away from this because it's too much of a diminishment of what we demanded. And
I think that point is the Medicare expansion.
And it could very well be the line in the sand could be some form of Medicare expansion. I do not think the idea of $800 dental coupons is going to do it. And that seems to be sort of where progressives, at least Bernie Sanders, starting to put their stake in the ground. Here is Bernie Sanders talking to Manu Raju. He is from CNN, and he's on Capitol Hill. This is him yesterday.
The pharmaceutical industry made $50 billion in profit and right now has 1,500 paid lobbyists here in Washington to make sure we don't lower the cost of prescription drugs. So to my mind, any serious reconciliation bill must include real Medicare negotiations with the pharmaceutical industry to lower the cost of prescription drugs. That's probably the issue most on people's minds. Maybe the issue second most on people's minds is the understanding that it is really insane that in the wealthiest country in the history of the world, we have tens of millions of Americans, older Americans, who have no teeth in their mouth, who are unable to digest the food that they're eating, people who cannot hear and communicate with their grandkids because they have no hearing aids, people who are unable to see. Well, this is America, richest country in the history of the world. Bottom line is that any reconciliation bill must include serious negotiations on the part of Medicare with the pharmaceutical industry, lower the cost of the prescription drugs. That's what the American people want. Any serious reconciliation bill must include expanding Medicare to cover dental, hearing aids, and eyeglasses.
Is that a red line for you? Is that a red line for you, sir? Sir, is that a red line for you?
I didn't hear what he said after that with the red line.
I don't think he said anything.
I don't know if he said very much. We play that last
he
moment.
He doesn't want the soundbite out there of it being a red line. They're in the midst of these tax negotiations.
Absolutely. I mean, he is saying specifically, like, a serious bill.
It is the red line. It is the red line. And that's when you tank the proposal. I mean, that's like Manchin getting too big for his britches there. It's also political suicide. I'm going to speak to their self-interests. Like, Medicare, as you've mentioned, one of the most popular program in the country, and an expansion of it that isn't convoluted, that centers around little coupons, as you say, it would be a significant political benefit for Democrats. So, you know, I know Manchin doesn't care about that. He cares about his own very particular personal brand in his state. But nationally, there needs to be a circling of the wagons around this proposal. Just for, I'm looking out for you idiots.
And I guess, you know, the bottom line is, you know, at what point does Sanders get up from the table and walk away and go like, done. This was my top priority. And if that doesn't happen in this, it's not worth it. I guess we'll see. And I'm glad I don't have to make that decision. But it seems to me that from Sanders' perspective, at least, if he doesn't get some type of meaningful movement on that or acceptance of that, the negotiation of the pharmaceuticals is just seems it's unbelievable to me that someone has the gall to actually be against that. I mean, just think about this. The idea is, should a buyer of mass quantities of prescription drugs be able to negotiate for those drugs, right? I mean, we allow Walmart and Amazon and all these massive corporations to engage in full-on monopsony. which is basically where we have eliminated all of the competitors. We're the only buyer of this. And not only are we going to negotiate for price, we're going to tell you how you need to grow your chickens. We're going to tell you how you need to, you can't sell this product in other places. I mean, we allow all of this. It's encouraged. And the idea that we would not allow the government to negotiate on pharmaceuticals is, it's just amazing to me. And this is cinema seems to be the biggest yes. culprit here, but I mean, who knows who else, that we don't have a media or a system or an engaged citizenry that can stand up and go like, hey, are you out of your mind? But even if you don't get that savings, both for Medicare recipients and for the U.S. government, going on to expand the benefits that you get with Medicare, particularly dental, one or the other of those, it seems to me, you need to have. But I guess we'll see. Let's get into this tax proposal, because it's, we don't know what... we don't know what Manchin's doing at this point. And, you know, it was reported, I don't know, a day ago that he was okay with this. And then I think...
And it was a hallelujah moment, because Sinema says no increase on corporate tax rates, no increase on highest marginal rates. But I could get on board with this billionaire tax that she was working on the side with Elizabeth Warren on. And then right before the show breaks, Manchin... says to Punchbowl, or they're reporting it, I don't want the billionaire tax either.
Well, and let's be clear here. There's two sets of taxes that we're talking about. One is this billionaire tax. We'll get into that in a moment. And then the second is essentially the functional equivalent of an alternative minimum tax for corporations, which basically says, and let's start with the corporate minimum tax. There would be a 15%, and the real story with corporate taxes in this country has always been the effective rate. Whatever the tax rate is, it doesn't matter if the corporations have figured out some mechanism in which to evade taxes.
Yes.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's a 30% corporate tax rate or a 5% corporate tax rate. If the corporations have figured out the mechanisms in which to avoid all taxes, it doesn't matter. This would basically do away with that problem. It would require some U.S. companies that report more than $1 billion in profits to shareholders, to pay at least a 15% tax rate, or I should say tax, period. Doesn't matter how many tax breaks they qualify for. And the way that they would assess those profits, it would be easy. There's a shareholders report that you've got to issue. So there's this game of like, shareholders, we made $10 billion last year, $3 billion per quarter, whatever it is. But then when it comes to the government, it's like, well, we didn't really make these profits because we were offsetting them with this depreciation or that tax break or whatnot. That would all go away.
And that would apply to around 200 companies that currently are circumventing that system.
And supposedly that would raise $300 to $400 billion over 10 years. So 30, you know, which it's not nothing. The idea is that it would simplify the tax rates. It would get rid of that that dynamic where they're not paying enough taxes, when they're not paying any taxes, and it raises some money in the context of the bill. This is also a change in the way that the tax code is structured, because it's no longer we're going to pretend to tax you. And then you come up with ways of getting around that tax totally. This is just going to be a very straightforward type of situation. You like to brag about your profits, of course, because that's what increases your stock value.
I do. Yeah, and, you're right.
And And as you know, your pay is tied to the stock value, so you have an incentive to report those profits and not underreport them.
It was written into my contract.
I mean, here's the irony, is that if these corporations actually were functioning in such a way that they were, that the most prominent issue for them was the long-term financial health of their corporations, maybe we'd be afraid they're under report their profits. But that's never the way they operate, because it's all about the value of their stocks, because all of the C-suite and the CEOs and the board of directors, they all get their pay, their compensation through the stocks.
Yes.
So this would be a big shift. And I guess because the rate stays at 21%, the corporate tax rate, Kristen Sinema is happy.
Yeah. And it also pairs with what the Biden administration was pushing and their initiative on the global minimum tax rate. So
exactly.
You're able to kind of have two layers to the wall. You can't go below this 15% rate. And it's enforced in a variety in two separate ways.
All right. So that takes us to the widened billionaires tax. And it is...
it's a lot more robust, and as I mentioned, than initially reported, which is encouraging.
I think people who have been listening to the program for any number of time know that my perspective on taxation is that the biggest role it plays in our system is to inhibit people owning too much money.
Huh.
So that we do not have a wealth disparity that also turns into a political disparity in terms of power. Now, that's already happened. We have a plutonomy that has turned into a plutocracy. We do not really technically need taxes to fund the government. We print our own money in this country, and we have a currency that is accepted worldwide. And we have the ability to fund what we want to fund. Taxes are helpful in the event that you do overheat the economy. You can pull back and basically pursue austerity at moments where you need to inhibit the purchasing power of society at any given point. So taxes also function in that way. Now, in the way that Washington exists today, taxes also are a method of raising money to spend, which is a way for the wealthy people in this country to inhibit what government does for the vast majority of people.
And so then you hear that in the form of pay fors, right? And
yes.
That's so the conversation we're having is, one, you're absolutely right, like we don't need to even be engaging in this, but regardless, Washington wants to engage in it altogether.
And the vast majority of Americans also perceive it this way,
yes,
too.
Yes, they perceive it this way because it's reinforced constantly, and Biden says, the bill will be fully paid for, right? But at the same time, Sinema and Manchin, or Sinema at least, no increase in corporate taxes, no increase in the highest marginal tax rate, which means, okay, then if the bill needs to be fully paid for, we are at an impasse, and then it is that logjam that inhibits social spending, and so it's like a built-in excuse in the system.
Exactly.
We can't do this for you. Okay, we could blow the whole thing up and do away with this fiction, but no one's willing to do that, even someone like Bernie, just yet.
This is the tool that they use. We can't afford this. We need to tighten our belt. We all need to make hard decisions. I mean, the rhetoric changes depending on the context. This is the reason why we need to cut Social Security. This is the reason why we need to cut this. The reason why I cut that, because, nobody wants to raise taxes. And so they have to pretend that we actually need to raise taxes to do this. The reason why you have taxes is to inhibit people from having a monopoly over money and, some type of concentration of power and of wealth. But so with that said, this is this is I mean, I like this a lot. This is, I think, one of the most exciting sort of developments from a tax perspective in doing that. What this bill, I don't know if it's really quite a bill, this proposal would do from Ron Wyden, it would tax billionaires, and I think it would only apply to like 700 billionaires. That number obviously is not fixed. It just so happens how many billions of dollars you have. It taxes billionaires on their unrealized capital income. So in other words, what billionaires do is, I own a billion shares of Amazon, let's just say, and I'm just making these numbers up because I don't know what the Amazon stock price is, but I imagine it's quite high, and I don't know how many outstanding shares are, but I would imagine there's quite a few. All right, but I own a million Amazon shares, and they're at an X number of price, and so they're worth, let's just say, $10 billion. Now, as that goes up, the value of the Amazon shares go up. Maybe it's gone from $8 billion to $10 billion and it go up to $12 billion. I don't have to pay taxes on that because I have not realized, what they say, the gains from that increase.
Yes.
I haven't sold the stock, and so I don't actually have the cash. But $8 billion, $10 billion, $4 billion, $1 billion worth of Amazon stock allows me to go out and borrow the money, and I get really good rates because I'm a billionaire. And believe me, like, I don't know any billionaires, but I know some people who are, like, you know, wealthy, and they get much better rates on all this stuff, and they're not even that wealthy.
Right.
And so I go out and I borrow the money. I want to build a spaceship and go to space. So I'm going to borrow the money against my stock. I don't have to pay taxes on that. On that money that I borrowed. In fact, I probably get a tax break, maybe on the interest, if I, depending on what I use it for. And that's what billionaires do to avoid taxes until essentially they die. And what this would do is simply say, okay, your stock went from $8 billion to $10 billion. We're going to tax that $2 billion gain.
We are taxing the increase in
the capital increase.
Gains.
It's what is known as the unrealized capital income. It exists out there. It has more value. You can get loans against it.
And it's nothing outrageous for you billionaires. It's 23.8% as proposed by Wyden. And it could get whittled down maybe to, you know, throw something over to Manchin.
Now, if your stock goes from $8 billion to $6 billion, well, then you have losses, and you can use those losses against any other gains you have in other places. So it's perfectly fair. Also, what this would do is it would institute a minimum tax on the profits large corporations tout to their shareholders. We said that already. It also taxes companies that buy back their own stock. If you go back into interviews that we've done, and we haven't had him on in a while, he's a Lozonic. It's Bill Lozonic. You can look him up, William Lozonic. We've had him on this program a couple of times. He's a professor, I think, at UMass Business. And his theory has been that stock buybacks, which incidentally were illegal,
they should still be illegal
up until,
yes,
1980, I think it was 2 or 81, when Ronald Reagan basically told the SEC, let's make that legal now. Prior to that, it was like a pump, you know, and not necessarily dump scheme. Like, if you buy your own stock, it increases the value of the stock. It's stock manipulation. And what happened is that when Ronald Reagan allowed for this to be legal, you started having companies who, instead of putting their money back into their company, instead of, like, maintaining a workforce, instead of maintaining a responsibility to the community, found the CEO of this corporation and you're on the board of directors, and we both own a ton of stock in the majority report, I'm like, you know what? Bradley, we don't need anymore. Matt, you're going to take over Bradley's job. We're going to save some money. I'm going to take that money, and I'm going to buy our own stock. And then guess what happens? You and I, who own, who get compensated through our stock purchases, we make more money. We have a little cottage industry.
The stock value increases, and thus we all get richer. And I mean, the idea that this is legal, because it is now incredibly commonplace. It's easy as breathing. And it's so common sense. Like, I remember a few years back, Chuck Schumer and Bernie Sanders did an op-ed in the New York Times, basically calling for, you know, calling
the
for
end of, yes.
Yes. I mean, this is like a way to cheat the system, and yet it's become so normalized.
I personally would like to get rid of it totally, but at the very least, there's going to be taxing that will at least disincentivize it a little bit.
Well, we hope.
We hope.
Yes.
These are all proposals, incidentally. There's also a 3.8% net investment tax from the Affordable Care Act to partnerships and S corporations who got a big benefit from the Trump tax cuts. And so these are essentially, ultimately what you're getting is less taxes on the rich, not less taxes, an absence of increase in taxes on the rich, but much more significant taxes on the ultra rich, which is, I think, a pretty good start. If these were separate, like I say, if these tax bills were separate from the reconciliation bill, people would be pretty psyched, I think. And, you know, there's specifics in it. You are eligible for this new tax if you have $1 billion in assets or $100 million in income for 3 straight years.
Pretty protected class.
Now, I know this is going to be rough, folks. And for me, if there's, you know, I don't know that there's going to be capital flight because of this. But God bless.
Fine.
Bye-bye.
Something either in the maybe it was the Times article that we read in the packet before, 3/4 of capital income goes unreported.
Of course.
Isn't that
of course.
Unbelievable?
And
3/4, I should say.
And let's be clear on how this is going to work. It's very easy to say, like, okay, you had $8 billion worth of Amazon stock, and now it's $10 billion, $2 billion. That's your unrealized capital gain. We're going to tax that. And you get 23.8% tax. And it's a mark to market. So at the end of the year, we assess how far it's gone up, and that's where we apply the tax. Now, there is, for people who already are in that sort of like cohort, there is a one-time tax on the built-in gain at the time of the enactment. So in other words, if I had $4 billion worth of Amazon stock and I bought that, or I've had it over the course of 20 years or whatever it is, and now it's worth $6 billion, the tax would be retroactive and you'd get 5 years to pay it off. As if you need the 5 years, but let's just, you know, we want to be nice. And so that's what, like, you know, a Jeff Bezos would do. You'd have to do that. Now, then it's also, there are some assets that are a little bit harder to tell what they are. Assets that aren't as easily tradable. And what they do in that instance is, you do not get taxed on that until you do sell it. But there's an interest payment. So the tax is actually higher because you've deferred that tax, but you still will pay the full tax plus interest.
So apparently Bezos would owe $40 billion today if this was implemented. So, and if he chooses to offset it or pay it out over increments, it would increase in interest.
And I don't know what that would put his wealth at.
I just looked it up. It's like, I mean, his net worth is $200 billion.
The difference between having $200 billion and $160 billion, or even if I would imagine the difference between having $200 billion versus like $50 billion is nothing. I mean, it's nothing. Maybe you have one less space program, or maybe you can't compete with governments on certain things.
Yeah, but you're unable to feed the insatiable beast that is his sociopathy.
it would take a couple of therapy sessions. I'm sure you'd get back to
it. Maybe if you can afford it after this new capital gains tax.
There is apparently, Mitt Romney said, like, well, since this is not tradable, I'm sorry, I said not tradable in terms of assets, like real estate or something like that, it's tradable, but it's just not as fluid. Like, right. How do you measure? If you have a mansion that's worth $10 million, and how do you measure how much it's worth in a year unless you sell it? You can't look on Zillow and get the exact, value of whatever it is. So that's the one that would defer. But there are some non-tradable assets, I guess. And like some, apparently someone has floated something like this. Maybe Mitt Romney has.
Paintings.
Yeah. Did we have a clip from Romney?
Yesterday.
Did we play that yesterday?
Yes.
Or did we actually, we didn't play that one, did we?
We did.
And yeah, so Romney said that yesterday. The idea that Bezos and whatever it is, Elon Musk or whoever one of these idiots are.
Elon Musk, I think, made $30 billion yesterday. Anyway.
Are going to sell their stock in their companies to invest in paintings and in diamonds or something like that. First off, I don't think there is enough of that stuff around. And they wouldn't do that, I think, because it would destroy their wealth.
Yeah.
Because, like, let's say they're like, we're going to buy up all of the Picassos.
Yeah.
And make them incredibly expensive. There's not enough people around to buy them from them. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, Jeff Bezos can sell one share of Amazon stock. And there is a lot of buyers out there for that one share of Amazon stock. He can sell these increments. But if he was to do paintings or diamonds, they would basically be burning their money.
I know. It's like, what Bond villain rich person is Mitt Romney, like, trying to pretend is going to be affected by this or get away with something?
Well,
it's just so silly.
They wouldn't do it. And frankly, if they did, like, okay.
Yeah.
I'm perfectly willing to have Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk tie up all of their fortune in super expensive paintings and in diamonds.
Bars of gold.
Yeah, because not gold, because gold you can actually cut up into. I want stuff that they are locked into. The only way that you're going to get your money out of this is if you find somebody else who can spend $12 billion on a Monet. And good. Then they're done.
Yeah.
And so this is a great proposal. And, well,
I don't think so,
says Joe Manchin.
You're right.
But it's divisive. He's the one guy who can spot that.
But who knows? I mean, his word is not worth the paper it's written on or like the spittle that comes out of his mouth when he says it. He can maybe be coaxed or changed.
Can you ever just believe, like, God, man.
What?
I just, like, the idea of, like, protecting the billionaire's wealth like that is just, to me, it's just, it's psychotic.
Right, but, I mean,
but
like,
that's who he hangs out with and
yeah.
stuff.
On his yacht! And also, again, it doesn't even become about, like, the substance of it at a certain point. It's, like, a personal thing. You read these reports of Manchin angrily, like, screaming at Bernie, how about none of it? Like, it's personal for this dude.
Yeah.
He wants to be the kingpin. And, you know, it's all office politics, except millions and millions and millions of people are
going
to be affected.
But like with cinema, like whenever it's personal, it's always personal in a way that serves the old.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Quick rundown of a reminder of what is in the bill and what's left of what was in the bill.
Mm-hmm.
The child tax credit This is the thing that was $3,600 per child for most people in the country. It would go down a little bit at one point from... that, like I said earlier, now they're talking about maybe just extending it 1 year, which is, you know, highly problematic unless the Democrats retake the House and the Senate, or maintain the House and the Senate at the midterms. But free community college, that's gone.
Yep.
Gone. Biden already said that that provision is dead.
Jesse Waters was right.
Medicare expansion, we don't know.
TBD.
Certainly the idea of dropping the age to 60 years old is gone. That maybe has been gone for a long time. We're not really sure. But the two questions are expanding Medicare to cover dental, to cover hearing and vision, and also the ability of Medicare to negotiate better pharmaceutical prices. We don't know. That's where Bernie, it appears, may be willing to die on that hill. We'll see. He's not articulating that he is, but we don't know. Paid leave. Originally, we were talking about a 12-week paid leave. Family and medical leave for every U.S. worker, including self-employed and gig workers, that would have been subsidized by the government, paid for by the government. There is a new version of that, which is shorter. They're talking like 4 weeks, narrower eligibility. And frankly, Matt Brunig wrote a piece, I can't remember where it was, on his public policy blog, I think, arguing that the way that they fashioned this, it's not worth doing now, that it's garbage. And if we get into a situation where the government is actually like subsidizing insurance companies to provide this paid leave, it's going to end up costing a lot more, and like a huge chunk of the benefits are just going to go to insurance companies. Not worth it. So paid leave, gonzo. I mean... And later in the program, we're going to be talking about these morons who are complaining about paternity leave. And just horrible human beings. Horrible human beings who are certainly wealthy enough to take the time off, who are, or have businesses that continue to run without them, right? I mean, didn't like a Crowder put on shows while he wasn't, he took his leave.
But that wasn't for his child. It was for like his personal health issues.
But then he took a couple more weeks.
Oh, did he?
I think Dave Rubin goes on hiatus for the month of August. It's nice.
Crowder does offer it, but he says it's also for pussies.
Right. Tax hikes. We've already gone through the tax provisions. There was also child care. Originally, the Democrats were talking about $450 billion for universal pre-K and a separate multi-billion-dollar program to essentially beef up the child care industry and make it more affordable for parents. It doesn't look good on the child care provisions. We don't know about universal pre-K. That could just be junked.
Yep.
Clean energy. Looks like a crap show right now.
Although, I mean, the White House now saying $500 billion maybe in the bill on climate, but, like, who knows? That was from Punchbowl this morning. But, like, you have to get it past Manchin. He's put up a firewall on pretty much any climate spending.
We have the expansion of the subsidies for Obamacare and also an attempt to federalize Medicaid for those red states that have not expanded Medicaid to their citizens. Don't know. Just don't know what the status of that is. Manchin seems to have a problem with the expansion of the Medicaid because it's unfair for other people to subsidize. I don't know what he says about that, but that doesn't look good. The Obamacare subsidies, we don't know what's going to happen at that point. We just don't know. That expires in 2022. Hard to say. Housing aid, Democrats wanted $300 billion in housing aid, 80 of which would have been public housing repairs, 75 for housing vouchers that would have helped low-income, older Americans, and other folks. Now they're looking like having that those amounts of money. In-home care, remember the elder care, $400 billion, keep older people in their homes, and folks who had disabilities. There is an 800,000 person list for people waiting for home care support. Home care workers get horrible wages, and it looks like there's going to be half that amount of funding at this point. I can tell you from personal experience, that kind of support, we have a horrible system, horrible, horrible system for dealing with people who are elderly and cannot care for themselves anymore. It is just just an unbelievable crap show. And it is the burdens fall disproportionately on like middle class people, actually.
And lower class people.
And people living in poverty, basically what you need to do is you need to spend down all of your assets and then you get on Medicaid. But then you only have the opportunity to like get a limited care in-home or you go into a nursing home. It is just a completely bat crap crazy system that we have. Medicaid pays for 2/3 of the people in nursing homes. 2/3. And the problem is, if you can't get decent care at home, you're putting people into institutions, you know, and it's a difficult situation. All right. We went longer than we were going to.
Really?
I think so.
You're trying to do a short show today?
Yeah.
Well,
I was going to do like a 20-minute show. It didn't work out.
20 minutes.
Yeah. We don't have the Peacock thing anymore, so I'm like, let's play around. Well, we used to, back in the day, do like every now and then, maybe once a week, we would do like a 20-minute, maybe not once a week, maybe once or twice a month, a 20-minute like teaser show, so that people were like...
I know, yeah.
But
maybe
this stuff
today wasn't
going down.
The day for that.
Today was not the day for that. David Dayen is going to be on Friday. We're going to talk more about this reconciliation bill and just about where, you know, nobody can predict what Joe Manchin's going to do. But all we can see is, like, you know, what proposals are out there. But, you know, the Wyden thing shows you the value of talking about policies in the midst of when you don't have any way to implement them, or
he's had this ready to go for 2 years, and so this is like a way at the 11th hour to just slot that into the reconciliation package to appease, you know, this psycho cinema.
Yep. All right, folks, see you.
Oh
wait, what am I talking about? Just gonna remind you,
See you later.
It's all
bye.
Gone.
Yeah, I'm going to bed. Folks, this show relies on your support. We are no longer sucking at the teat of big corporate America.
Except
like we were.
That our show streams on YouTube, which is owned by Google.
Well, we do publish on all sorts of different platforms. Soon, maybe also, we'll start to... We'll do it on Rumble.
Yes. Thang will be sucking
get some
at
cred.
Do you know
Palantir's teeth?
Actually, like that kind of goes in with the plug for tonight's Left Reckoning, if I could just do that. Now, do you know how much Peter Thiel was simply just a right wing hack before he hit it big with the right software engineering and investing? He was just writing a book called The Diversity Myth. He a speech wrote for I forget what his name is, but he handled the war on drugs under H.W. Bush. He was just a hack. He's a Stanford kid that graduated from law and like did some speech writing for a Republican and wrote these crappy like anti-PC culture books. And then he made friends with a software engineer that made PayPal, and he got a whole bunch of dollars, and he also did like a sort of Roth IRA sort of scam that like I can't really follow how that works.
I think I know how that works. Yeah. You put in, you get stock.
I did an interview on this for Peacock.
This is what Romney did.
Yeah.
And when he was at Bain Capital, I think it was, they give him stock. And when you first issue the stock, like, it has no value.
It's a cent. I mean, it's 2 cents, whatever.
Here's and you know, whatever the Roth IRA limit is like $2,000 or something like that. I can't remember off the top of my head. But just call it $2,000. Here's this stock. It's worth $2,000.
And then it's like, under the limit.
Miraculously, in 6 months, it's worth $500,000.
And then he sold PayPal. And then like then you're able to. Then there's no limit. Like there have been congressional proposals on the on how to like you can have just a top line what dollar amount can go into a Roth IRA. But that hasn't gone through at all. Like, because of those very kinds of situations. Now, there are estimates that his Roth IRA is worth, you know, tens of billions of dollars.
Yeah, and so once you hit it big like that, you rebrand yourself as this sort of oracle of investment, like the new Warren Buffett or whatever. And but we're going to play an old clip of him in 1996 before he made all the money.
Wait, was he working for Bill Bennett?
Yes, that's who it is.
Oh, God, Bill Bennett's the worst. He was the worst.
Yeah.
He was this moralizing sort of like right-wing libertarian style guy who was looking to privatize education. And then it came out he had like blown all his cash. I don't know if he had a gambling problem. And also, I think at one point we actually interviewed a dominatrix in Vegas. Like he would go to Vegas and just blow it out. But he was so moralizing. That was the thing. You know, like I'm not necessarily pro going to see a dominatrix. I'm certainly agnostic. I'm probably somewhere in between. I mean,
go
fun.
See a dominatrix support, if you want to see a dominatrix.
Yeah, just in general, support sex workers. But the idea that you would make your living moralizing about this stuff and then, you know, blowing all the cash that you made from your living on gambling and we had a dominatrix in for the RNC 2004.
She was really?
Just like, she's like, the business is just off the charts. Like when the Republicans show up, like they just like so so desperately want to be humiliated. And folks, which reminds me, you should support this program by becoming a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you support the free show and then you get the fun half. And go now, buy tickets for our live show in Boston. It's at the Wilbur Theater. It's January 16th, right? At 3 p.m. We're going to have some real fun. Check it out. We've got a lot of stuff already planned. Some stuff we're going to plan as we get closer. It really is going to be, I mean, it's also going to be the first time that like any of us have gone out and done anything like, you know, sort of like publicly like this. And it's vax and mask situation in Boston, unless like, I don't know, by December, you know, COVID's over. I don't think so. But vax and mask situation and at the Wilbur Theater, it's a great theater. We're going to have a lot of fun.
It's like a 100-year-old theater, isn't it?
I mean, the Wilbur is like a big deal in Boston. I saw things there as a kid, so I'm pretty excited about it. So check it out. Go buy tickets. And, of course, don't forget, you can become a member of the Discord. now the IMs are going crazy. I support the show, but will Sam spank me? there we go.
New revenue stream.
Let's see. Who knows what we'll have planned for the live show. So check that out. Also, AM Quickie. If you go to amquickie.com, you don't have to do anything. You just go to amquickie.com, put your email in. You will sign up for the AM Quickie. It'll be sent to your inbox every day. Check it out. All right, 646-257-3920. And if you want to IM the show, pick up the app at majorityapp.com.
Also, Ben Burgess talking about Charlie Kirk debate tonight, Left Reckoning.
Oh, we're going to play a clip of that, right? Yep. And the fun half. All right, see you in the fun half.
Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous? You're a little bit upset? You're riled up?
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2. 5/8. 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabber.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey Sam, hey Andy, you guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
Do.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands
up. Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me.
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.